Disclaimer. Twigs Cafe Radio and twigscaferadio.com and its owners and associates take no responsibility for the opinions, statements, or claims made by the talk show hosts or their guests. Statements or show topics are not necessarily the beliefs of the station.
Disclaimer. Don't believe a word I or any of my guests say on the show. Check them out for yourself. Legal information is not the same as legal advice. The information presented is strictly for educational entertainment purposes and is provided to my listeners to help them safely cope with their own legal needs. We recommend you consult a lawyer if you want professional advice.
In a world filled with political correctness, one man must rise above the idiocy to awaken the sleeping, apathetic masses in an intellectual battle of epic proportions. In a war against an out-of-control, tyrannical government hell-bent on the destruction of freedom and liberty, the sleeping giant will someday awaken, and freedom will persevere. You're listening to Politically Incorrect with John Kistler on Twigs Cafe Radio.
And welcome, everybody, to the last day of August 2016. Wow, where's the summer gone? The kids are back to school. We've just been sitting here in the studio. I got here about 3 o'clock and got set up for all the other shows here. We did, Jasikoff and Friends. We had, Nikki Hennevig on, and we had, Jack Harris pop in the studio. Then we went into Sanity Check and Lou popped in. He was here today and able to sit in on the show. We had X and Gary Duncan. We just got off the phone with Don Wassel, and Andy Ostrowski was on with us for Justice Served. And now we're into my segment of the show here. You listen to the disclaimer, but I'll tell you what, the gentleman that I have lined up here tonight, his name is Lewis Ewing. He is just a vast wealth of knowledge. He just sent me so much information. I've been inundated trying to go through it and look at everything, but we cover, with being an internet radio station, we cover the entire globe. We have people in China listening to us. Lewis is out in Washington State. I have people in Canada, Mexico, Florida, all over the country listening to us. Lewis, thanks for coming on the show, and not sure where we want to start tonight with some things, but you pick a topic, because you've got just so many things that you've kind of nailed down and perfected. I guess it would be called a remedy for people in the Patriot Movement to get some redress for their grievances in this unjust, corrupt system that we have.
Yes, and the first thing I'd like to point out, along with your disclaimer, is I got to tell everybody I'm not an attorney, I'm not a member of the bar, I never went to law school, where I guarantee you, it's spelled with K, S-K-O-O-L, where I guarantee you, you were schooled. If you weren't schooled, you were fooled.
Well, I am a member of the Bar Association, but it's called the Taurus Club in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, okay. Folks, I'm not an attorney. Like I said, not a member of the bar, never went to law school, but I've made my living undercutting attorneys for the last 20 years. I've advertised on the Internet since December 8, 1996, when my last driver's license expired, that I drive with no license, no insurance, no seatbelt, and smoke pot, and so can you. And for those of you who don't know this, I am the real reason why they're legalizing marijuana in all the states. And although I don't have my new flyers up yet on my website, if you go to Ultimate Users with an S on the end, ultimateusers.com, you'll see a picture of the White House covered with marijuana plants. And what I'm educating people is that I put a state statute side by side with the federal statute, which shows you an affirmative defense that has been on the law books since the early 1970s, when they first enacted the drug code, Title 21, United States Code section, that provides an exemption for recreational users, but it's actually called the Ultimate User Statute. And I put the registration statute, requirement statute, which shows in all states, except for about 4 or 5 states that I've discovered so far that are hiding the statute, it says the following persons need not register and may lawfully possess controlled substances under this chapter. I put three dots, which in legal writing, as you know, as an attorney, that means when you're deleting or omitting something, and I did that to skip one subsection 1 and 2 of the statute, in Washington, it's RCW 6950302, subsection C3. Subsection 3 says, an ultimate user or a person with the written authorization, and goes on with a long description, basically describes somebody as a prescription to have whatever kind of drug for whatever kind of condition or sickness that they have. Well, the statute is worded in the plural. It says the following persons, not person in the singular, but persons in the plural. So clearly the statute refers to two classes of people. Subsection 3 is worded in the disjunctive, an ultimate user or that person with the prescription. Okay, so I'm giving you a choice of one or the other, or, you know, but not both. And is a conjunctive word, you know, or is like, do you want an apple or an orange? I'm giving you a choice of an apple or an orange versus do you want an apple and an orange, where I'm giving you a choice of one or the other or both if you choose. So statute clearly refers to two classes of people. Now, in Washington State, you show this to any attorney, prosecutor, or judge, they will lie to you right in your face and say, oh, no. You have to have a prescription to be an ultimate user. Well, the first rule of statutory construction any attorney will tell you is you have to read the statute as written. The second rule is you can't add or subtract words. Three, the case law in every state interpreting the statutes says that when the legislature provides a definition, the statutory definition controls. In the alternative where the legislature doesn't provide a definition, then we can go to the legal dictionary definitions. But no need to do that. Just go a few pages away to the definition section in the Revised Code of Washington, which is 6950101, the definition section. You scroll down through the alphabetical order, you will find the term ultimate user. Ultimate user, specifically defined in law, means an individual who uses a controlled substance for his own individual use, comma, for administration to a member of your family or household, which, by the way, folks, I hate to say this, could be your pregnant baby, comma, for administration to an animal or a pet owned by you. Me being the smarty pants that I am, I wrote down Washington law and federal law says I have the right to get my dogs and cats stoned if I want to. Okay, now I don't want to primarily talk about drugs or whatnot, but I want to point out to those of you who know of people who've had their baby seized at the hospital because you tested positive for drugs. That's an unlawful seizure. First of all, they had no warrant. Two, they did not inform you that they're going to do a drug test review of your baby. Three, they didn't give you the opportunity to refuse to give your consent. They took it without your permission. That's a violation of not only the federal HIPAA laws, okay, and CPS has illegally installed an office in every single birthing center across the United States. They have illegally trained the hospital nurse to conduct a drug test without the mother's consent or permission or knowledge. Then they violate the HIPAA laws by receiving that knowledge, first of all. The second HIPAA violation is when they tell the hospital social worker. The hospital social worker commits a separate HIPAA violation by receiving the information. That's count one. The second count, count two, would be the hospital social worker providing that information to a CPS social worker. The CPS social worker, count one, is accepting that violation of the HIPAA law. She's committed a violation. Then, two, when she does any kind of action to seize or take your child or file something with CPS or in a court or family court, she's committing a separate violation by revealing that medical information to somebody else. So we have a straight-up violation of the federal HIPAA laws, and also if you look in your state statutes for the state medical privacy laws, it'll tell you that whatever kind of testing that they want to do, they have to inform you in advance. They have to give you 14 days notice. They have to reveal to you in advance to which agencies they might reveal that information to and the purposes for which it might be used against you. And the case law interpreting those sections about that 14-day notice says you have the right to go to the court and ask for an injunction to prohibit them from releasing that information. But guess what? They had no right to get that information in the first place. So guess what? Every seizure of a baby at a hospital for testing positive for drugs is straight-up felony kidnapping. Period. Now, I am the one and only man in the state of Washington to ever get my child, my son, Lewis West, back from a PIC facility in Washington State 10 years ago when I made the mistake of falling in love with a stripper. She was a drug addict. And, well, She tested positive for cocaine, ecstasy, methamphetamines, Percocets, and marijuana. Well, after about 3 weeks, 4 weeks of legal briefing and serving them with legal papers showing the illegalities by the statutes and the case law, the lack of consent, not obtaining my permission, I get a call from the Attorney General's office. Mr. Ewing, we made arrangements for you to pick up your son tomorrow at 10:30. So I got my son back from a PIC facility where apparently the nurses told us they'd already scheduled our baby to be adopted and sold to a couple in Canada that they say that they pay $150,000 to $200,000 per baby to adopt children to parents who can't have children in Canada, which I find very suspicious that they're selling babies for that amount of money, and two, they're going across state lines. And I'm thinking, well, once they get across state lines, they can destroy their identity. They'll never find the children again. And how do we know those children aren't being sacrificed in bohemian rituals or Satanism or whatever, the Skull and Bone Society? I hear these stories on the Internet about human meat being found in the hamburgers, you know, and where are they getting that human meat from? And they're shipping children out of the country, and then they claim their computer hard drives crashed and the children are disappearing. So CPS needs to be investigated. But I want to talk more about CPS. Everybody knows social workers lie. And my specialty, folks, is criminal law. I mainly do IRS cases, income tax evasion, willful failure to file cases, and big drug cases. In 2004, I won the largest marijuana case in the United States ever won by a pro se litigant. Yes, there's been cases, there have been a lot more. But I had a friend who got busted growing 166 pot plants all over 6 feet tall. The best purple bud you'd ever smoked in your life. I beat it pretrial in Snohomish County in 2004. You know, this is what I do, drug cases and IRS cases. I prevented people from going to jail even though they were found guilty of income tax evasion and willful failure to file. I had a couple guys in the Carolinas. I can send you guys the case numbers. If you want to find out the information, I'll send you a list of testimonials. You send me an email to RCW Codebuster. That stands for Revised Code of Washington. So it's RCW CODEBUSTER. Those are my emails at AOL.com, Yahoo.com, and Gmail.com, the RCW Codebuster. But I specialize in criminal law, and I'm looking at this family law stuff, and I'm thinking, why isn't everybody says the social worker lies? And so I announced this stuff that you guys aren't challenging the perjury, and these people in the family rights groups, it's like they're shutting me out, blocking me out. You know, I don't know. They're afraid I'm going to steal their client base. I'm showing them up. I'm making them look stupid. You know, but I'm starting to think all the family rights groups and all the CPS people are really grossly ignorant of the law. They don't know what they're doing. They don't. They just. I've looked all across the Internet. I probably looked at every family law website, every Fight CPS website, and all I see is the same pity party, boo-hoo, they stole our child, we got to get together, let's do petitions. And I see a new website coming up literally every month from some person who says, we're going to be the one that makes the difference, rah, 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 join us, get out of the way. If you're not part of helping us and supporting us, you're part of the problem. We're going to change the way CPS does business. And I'm rolling my eyes thinking, what in the hell can these people do? They don't know crap about the law. And if you don't know crap about the law, but you're putting up your Visa, MasterCard, Discover card, saying donate to me, donate to me. And so everybody joins your group, signs your petitions, joins your class action lawsuits. And a year or two later, nothing's going on. I hear no solutions. Well, guess what, folks? I have a solution. And a solution, nobody's ever heard of it before. There's not a single family law so-called expert or family law advocate. There's not a single attorney in the entire United States. There's not a single public defender that has raised the issues that I've raised, which tells me one of three things, folks. And I won't say the name of the person, but a family law advocate about a year ago when I first put this up said, Lewis, Frank's motion raising Giglio claims and these kind of claims are only for criminal cases. And I'm rolling my eyeballs. I'm thinking, okay, you know, I like this guy. He's a nice guy. He's actually helped people get children back, but he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about because obviously he doesn't understand the law, period. Folks, in every single state, Rule 2, State Superior Court Rule, there should be one form of action called a civil action. In your state statutes, you're going to find that they've abolished all criminal pleadings. They've combined law and equity into one form of action called civil. Okay, and to prove this guy wrong, instead of putting his name, I put up another article. You'll see it on my Facebook, and you folks can send me an ad request on Facebook and look at the articles I post. I post lots of case law. You got to click on the continue reading part in the blue to get to it. But if you look at a second from the top of my Facebook, Lewis Ewing, L-U-I-S-E-W-I-N-G, Lewis Ewing, I wrote, do not let any incompetent or criminally corrupt State Bar Association attorney tell you that Giglio claims, NAPU claims, Piles claims, Mooney claims, Alcorta claims, Eggers claims, or Brady claims only apply to criminal cases. That is 100% false, and I have the case law to prove it. Now, for you folks who don't know this, a Frank's motion, I'm thinking, why in the hell hasn't a single family law attorney raised this issue? I'll tell you why, folks. They're in conspiracy with the court to lose on purpose. The public defenders are all losing on purpose. Okay, and the fact that I'm not a bar attorney, and then I'm going to tell you remedies that have been existing for years and years and years, but have never been raised in the family court, is evidence of A, the attorney is grossly ignorant of the law and therefore incompetent, or B, is really lazy and therefore incompetent, or C, that attorney knows about this, but they're keeping their mouth shut. They're sitting on their hands. They're losing cases on purpose because this perpetuates their job existence. It's all job security. Just think about it. This is going to make common sense, folks. What if every attorney in your courthouse was to work hard at their cases, write a competent pleading showing that your children never should have been taken into custody or that the information should be suppressed and that your children should be returned, and they're filing at the very first hearing. And let's say all the attorneys were winning and they got all their children back. Wouldn't that be wonderful? That would be great, wouldn't it? Well, the social workers seem to have some kind of hold. The CPS seems to have some kind of a hold over the court system. The attorneys are scared to buck CPS. Now, if all the attorneys were winning and all the public defenders were winning and all the parents were getting their children back, they'd all be out of a job. And the social worker supervisors are saying, well, my brainless bimbo can't get away with lying, and we can't lie and commit perjury to steal these children, and we don't keep a certain amount of children in custody. We don't get a certain amount of children in custody every quarter. We're going to lose our federal funding. And if we don't keep a certain amount of children in custody, we're going to lose our federal funding. We won't get our adoption bonuses, and we'll be out of a job. And I'm thinking, like, wah, that would be just too bad, huh? The state would save a lot of money. No, they would lose a lot of money, folks. Look at the budget. CPS probably has one-third to two-thirds of the budget in every single state. We're talking billions of dollars. Job security. So what's the procedure? What is the solution that you haven't heard before? Well, folks, everybody needs to start Googling up a Frank's motion.
Lou, have to interrupt you here. We have to take a break right now, but we'll be right back, folks.
Marty's Market on Route 6 in Meshoppin is the little store that saves you more. Open 7 days a week with country butcher shop quality at supermarket prices. Visit us on Route 6 in Meshoppin or Route 307 in Lake Winola.
Justice Served with your host, Andy Ostrowski, live every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday on TwigsCafeRadio.com. Improving the quality of access to justice in America by shining a light on obstacles that have compromised this basic right. Justice Served, live every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday on TwigsCafeRadio.com.
This is Nurse John from WaterCures.org. I want to show you how to salt and water your way to an A. Before you know it, your next test, your next midterm, or final is going to be here. You can improve your memory and your school grades without using dangerous and illegal drugs. This little-known ancient trick will help you think, reason, and test better than ever before. What is this trick that can help you improve your grades? Place a pinch of unprocessed sea salt on your tongue, dissolve it, and then drink a glass of water. Do it about 30 minutes before you study and 30 minutes before you test. And get ready to be amazed. This won't get you out of studying. You can't recall what you don't know, but you're going to find it easier to study and easier to remember. One last thing, it has to be unprocessed salt. Numerous minerals in the salt are part of what make you smarter. Go do it. What are you waiting for? Get smart. Use the Water Cures protocol. Discover more how to salt your way to an A at watercures.org. paid for by Connie and Bob Butts.
Twigs Cafe Radio and the Independent Gazette have joined forces to bring you all of your local, regional, and national news. Look for the Independent Gazette each month on your local newsstands or follow the links to twigscaferadio.com. Do you want it sent to your door? Shoot us an email at twigscaferadio@gmail.com. The Independent Gazette, bringing Northeast Pennsylvania its local, regional, and national news.
Jasikoff and Friends on TwigsCafeRadio.com invite you, the community, and all its listeners to stop by or call and share the news and events that are important to you. Jasikoff and Friends, live every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m. on TwigsCafeRadio.com.
And welcome back, everybody. Sometimes we get carried away here in the station when we're on a break. We just continue on with the conversation about what was going on. Lou, welcome back. Just before I turn the show back over to you, I want to remind everybody, we got two call-in numbers, 570-836-2920 or 570-836-4771. You can email us at twigscaferadio@gmail.com. I'm John Kistler, your host. My personal cell phone number is 570-760-7767. You can also text me there, or you can send me a text at johnkistler.us. Lou, sorry I had to cut you off here, but we do have to take a break every 20 minutes just to comply with the licensing. So anyway, you were talking about the children protective services before we took a break, so I'm going to turn the show back over to you again.
Okay, folks, what I'd like to talk about is a Frank's motion, which is a long and well and established consistent method for attacking perjured testimony in a criminal case. It actually can be applied to civil, and I found the case law that proves it. But let me give you the site, folks, so that you can Google this up yourself. Frank's versus Delaware, 438 U.S. Supreme Court, page 154, 98 Supreme Court Reporter, page 2674, or 57 Limited Edition 2nd, page 667, 1978. The Supreme Court held that a search warrant application whose probable cause showing is based on false statements and material omissions must be voided and the fruits of the search excluded. Generally, if a defendant makes a substantial preliminary showing that a false statement knowingly and intentionally or with reckless disregard for the truth was included by the affiant in the warrant affidavit, and if the allegedly false statement is necessary to the finding of probable cause, the Fourth Amendment requires that a hearing be held at the defendant's request and that, quote, the search warrant must be voided and the fruits of the search excluded to the same extent as if probable cause was lacking on the fact of the affidavit. Well, there you go, folks. How come not a single attorney, family court lawyer, public defender in the entire United States is going into court filing a Frank's motion demanding a full-on evidentiary hearing called a Frank's hearing? And the good news about this, the case law interpreting Frank's versus Delaware says if you make just a preponderance of the evidence standard, that's the same standard what I call the brainless bimbos are using, the preponderance of the brainless bimbo stupid lying biot standard. I won't swear, I'd use the word biot, but you know what I meant. These people are lying. Everybody knows they're lying, and nobody's challenging it properly. Now, the case law says, here's the procedure under Frank's versus Delaware. If you make a prima facie showing, you don't have to prove the perjury at the outgo. If you make a prima facie showing based on the preponderance of evidence standard, the slightest scintilla of evidence, McCormick's on evidence says the preponderance of evidence standard is the lowest threshold of evidence standard there is based upon the weight of a feather, right at 51%. So if you make a prima facie showing on the preponderance of evidence standard that the social worker lied, or the cop lied, or the anonymous informant lied, or the government paid informant lied, which basically a social worker falls into the category of a professional informant. Okay, so if you make a showing they lied, they have to grant a full-on evidentiary hearing. And the procedure is, once you make that showing, the judge is required to remove the perjured testimony, or if the cop omitted information that would have exonerated you, or the social worker omitted information that would have exonerated you, they have to supply that missing information. Now the judge has to make a ruling. Would I have granted the pickup order, that emergency pickup of your child based upon an alleged emergency? And if the answer is no, that's return your child right now. Now all the social workers are going, but if we have to return all the children, we're going to lose our federal funding and we're going to be out of a job. And I'm like, are you kidding me? You social workers are getting away with lying? Folks, that's another thing I want to bring up that nobody has ever raised before. How come none of your attorneys or public defenders specifically told you, how is it the social workers and the guardian ad litem are getting away with lying? Okay? I've got the answer for that. And I put out free flyers, and if you send me your email, I'll send you copies of these flyers. I have a flyer, I call it CPS Immunity from Perjury Flyer, citing a case called Briscoe versus LaHue. And the site for that is 460 U.S., page 325, or 103 Supreme Court Reporter, page 1108, or 75 Limited Edition, second, page 96, March 7th, 1983, where the United States Supreme Court granted immunity for committing perjury to police officers. That's right, a police officer in uniform, on duty, wearing his badge. I don't care even if he's wearing a suit and tie and whatnot. He's getting paid to be there. He's on duty when he's testifying. Briscoe versus LaHue granted immunity for police officers for committing perjury in open court on the stand. That immunity has now been extended to social workers. Here's a case from Washington proving it. Gilliam versus DSHS, 89 Washington Appellate, page 569 or 950 Pacific Reporter, page 20, January 26, 1998. Another case, Burns versus County of King, 883 Federal 2nd, page 819, 9th Circuit, 1989. Here's a California case, Toller versus Paulson, 551 Federal Supplement 2nd, page 1039, 1046, Eastern District of California, 2008. Basically, these cases say, when extended to judges, prosecutors, grand jurors, witnesses, and others who perform other official functions in the judicial phase of a proceeding, absolute immunity protects the nature of the judicial proceeding itself, citing Briscoe versus LaHue. The reasons for this rule are also substantial. It is precisely the function of a judicial proceeding to determine where the truth lies. The ability of courts under carefully developed procedures to separate truth from falsity and the importance of accurately resolving factual disputes in criminal and civil cases are such that those involved in judicial proceedings should be given every encouragement to make a full disclosure of all pertinent information within their knowledge. You know, this reasoning by the judges and the court decision makes no sense whatsoever, folks. None. Okay? If a social worker had no immunity for perjury and they knew that they could go to jail and be charged with perjury, they would either refuse to take the stand or you'd see them shaking. They'd be shaking in their footsteps. Their hands would be shaking, their face, their voice would be quivering. They'd be scared shitless not to go to jail. But now, because we've granted them a statute in Washington, RCW 26.44.060, which basically is the codification of the Briscoe versus LaHue rule, this statute, 26.44.060 RCW, says immunity from civil or criminal liability. Confidential communications not violated, actions against state not affected, false report penalty. 1A. Except as provided in subsection B of this subsection, or any person participating in good faith in the making of a report pursuant to this chapter, or testifying as to alleged child abuse or neglect in a judicial proceeding, shall in so doing be immune from any liability arising out of such reporting or testifying under any law of this state or its political subdivisions. What kind of crap is this, folks? From now on, when you folks go to a family court proceeding and you see a judge stand up about to swear in the social worker, I want you guys to take my flyer to court. These are two-page flyers. I want you to print out 100 of them, hand them out to everybody in the courtroom. When that judge raises his hand, I want you to object and say, Your Honor, I object, and I did this in my own case. Okay? And this freaked the judge out. Judge Kevin Hall in Kitsap County Superior Court. I object, Your Honor, Mr. Ewing. I'm swearing in Ms. Cummings. You can wait till I'm done swearing her in to state your objection. No, Your Honor, I object right now. I object to you swearing her in. Mr. Ewing, what is this about? And I go, well, Your Honor, I object to the fact that you, sir, are perpetrating a fraud upon this courtroom. What are you talking about? Sir, Your Honor, Briscoe versus LaHue, the U.S. Supreme Court granted immunity for committing perjury to cops. That same immunity had been granted to social workers under Gilliam versus DHHS, a Washington case, Burns versus County of King, another Washington case that went to the federal court, and cases across the entire United States have been extended to social workers. You know for a fact that she has immunity, and you're pretending to swear her in. She knows that she has immunity for committing perjury, and she's standing up, raising her right hand, pretending to be sworn in, when you and her, both, in conspiracy, have full knowledge that she has immunity for committing perjury. So why are you pretending to swear in? Your Honor, I move that she not be allowed to testify. Your motion is denied, Mr. Ewing. No, Your Honor, that's not a motion. I demand that she not be allowed to testify. Let the record reflect that the judge and the social worker are engaged in a criminal conspiracy to commit perjury, and the judge is committing subordination to perjury. He is encouraging her to commit perjury by pretending to swear her in, by standing up, raising his right hand. He got all pissed off. His face got red. He looked like a deer caught in headlights. He declared a recess, and he ran out of the courtroom. All the public defenders and the attorney general in the case looked shocked. At the same time, they looked pissed. Now, I wasn't sure if they were in shock because they didn't know this, and they look pissed at the same time. So I'm thinking, maybe they do know this, and they're pissed off because the judge let the hat out of the bag. He basically admitted to it. And then he comes back in and pretends like nothing happened, looking all nonplussed like all the judges try to do. But they have absolute immunity, folks. Send me an email, and I'll send you this email. Toler versus Parson. Witnesses are immune from civil liability under Section 1983 based on their testimony and judicial proceedings. Briscoe versus Leo. This immunity extends to sworn statements made to the court. Burns versus County of King, 883, Federal 2nd, page 819 at 822, 9th Circuit, 1989. This is Toler versus Parson, Paulson, a California case, 551, Federal Supplement 2nd, page 1039 at 1046, Eastern District of California, 2008. Here's another one, Myers versus Contra Costa Department of Social Services, 812 Federal 2nd, 1154 to 1156, March 16, 1987. It is beyond question that Haaland is entitled to absolute immunity for the testimony he gave during the dependency proceeding and the custody hearing because witnesses, including government witnesses, are immune for their testimony, citing Briscoe versus Hugh again. Haaland should be accorded prosecutorial immunity for his role in the initiation of dependency proceeding against Myers. In yet another case involving similar circumstances, the Sixth Circuit also held state social workers have absolute immunity from 1983 actions resulting from the initiation of judicial proceedings, citing Kurzawa versus Miller, 732 Federal 2nd, page 1456 from the Sixth Circuit, 1984. The court rested its holding on the decisions of the Supreme Court in Imbler, Butts, and Briscoe versus LaHue. Mossberg versus Department of Social Services, 884 Federal 2nd, page 133 at 137, 4th Circuit, 1989. In addition, the guardians, therapist, and the attorney have absolute immunity for any damage claims based on the function of testifying before the family court. Briscoe versus LaHue, holding that witnesses and other persons who are integral parts of the judicial process are entitled to absolute immunity. Myers versus Morris, 810 Federal 2nd, page 1437 at page 1466, February 3rd, 1987. Folks, that's the bad news. Well, it's the good news also because now I'm revealing something to you that none of your attorneys, family court lawyers, or public defenders ever told you. Why is that, folks? The presumption is, A, the attorney's ignorant of the law, which, by the way, folks, is grounds for automatic disbarment. That would be grounds for a new trial based upon ineffective assistance of counsel because they're required to know the law. Certainly, an attorney who's a member of the bar can't claim ignorance of the law. And if you look that up carefully in the rules of professional conduct, it's grounds for disbarment. Okay? Or C, worst, which I think it is, it's a combination of all of the above, ignorance, laziness, and stupidity, and criminal. I believe that all the attorneys and public defenders are engaged in a criminal conspiracy to lose cases on purpose because they did not inform you of this. And how come they're not looking at the criminal cases? Here's the good news on this case. Washington case, State versus Bavra, 33 Washington Appellate, page 142, 1982. Prosecutor failed to reveal to defense that a witness had informal immunity held to be prejudicial error in State versus Bavra. So how come your public defenders aren't submitting a motion for acquittal at the close of the government's case or a motion to vacate judgment based upon the fact that the assistant attorney general running your case or the prosecutor running your case did not inform your defense attorney or public defender that the social workers had immunity for committing perjury. Under State versus Barbara, that's grounds for a whole brand new trial. How come they're not doing that, folks? There's first proof that they're losing on purpose. Now, another thing I did that embarrassed the judge and all the public defenders in the courtroom, I objected to the judge that every single public defender in the courtroom was doing exactly what I'm saying they're doing, folks. And I'm going to be all, I'm doing the research on this because I'm going to do a write-up on it, showing that all the public defenders across the United States are losing cases on purpose. So here I am in open court reading from the judge's bench book. By the way, folks, I have a copy of every single judge's bench manual in the state of Washington. And in the judge's bench manual for courts of limited jurisdiction and the superior courts, there's a specific section called ineffective assistance of counsel. And in that specific section, there's a case called State versus McFarland. I don't have the site in front of me right now, but I can email it to anybody who asks. State versus McFarland is an appellate and a Supreme Court decision. It says, failure of the public defenders to attack the probable cause for arrest constitutes ineffective assistance of counsel. Well, which begs the question, how can you raise an issue after trial? It's done. It's over with. And then when they terminate your parental rights, a certain amount of time goes by and they close the case. That's another thing that nobody's pointing out. That's illegal. When you're a criminal, a rapist, a robber, a burglar, a child molester, that's a public record. Those files are available forever. They don't close the files. Why are they closing the files? Well, that's to protect the children. No, it's not. Not to protect the children. Because once they adopt the children, they move them usually out of state. They change their names. They change their identity. So closing their case is not germane or relevant to protecting the children. Why are they closing the case files? I'm going to tell you a reason why, folks. They're covering up the fact that the public defender's attorneys are doing nothing in the children's defense. They don't want somebody with knowledge of the law like me coming in after the fact and inspecting your court file and see the police reports for why they took your children into custody or the social worker's reports for why they took your children into custody. Because somebody with knowledge of the law could pick your case apart and say, well, how come the public defender didn't submit this motion to attack for probable cause arrest of the mother, like in the case of my ex-girlfriend, who got pulled over allegedly driving a stolen truck. I am, again, going through a battle with CPS now since 2012, okay? And I'm playing catch-up with family law. Family law is not my bailiwick, okay? I've been doing criminal law for 20 years. But the last 3-4 years, and I'm catching up real fast because I'm using my knowledge of the criminal law to figure out what's wrong with this system. And the public defender in Catherine West's case got her to plead guilty to taking a motor vehicle without permission. Well, I found two Supreme Court cases in the Washington judge's bench manual that says if it's discovered that the car was originally loaned to that person by a friend or a family member, the court should dismiss the charges. In fact, common sense says you shouldn't have charged that person with taking a motor vehicle without permission in the first place if they were given permission in the first place. Duh. And I'm looking at all the public defenders, and they're all making excuses. Well, that's a separate case. That's a criminal case. It's separate from the children's case. Well, guess what? My children have standing to attach a probable cause for arrest. Then one of my own children's public defenders said, Mr. Ewing doesn't have standing to attack the probable cause for Catherine West's offense or his children's arrest because he doesn't have standing because he is an adversarial position in this courtroom and he can't represent the children. And I'm thinking, well, then it's your job. It's your job to make this motion. Well, I'm going to decide what defense I want to do. And see, this is proof that Stephen Greer, Kitsap County public defender, losing my son's cases on purpose. The other public defender, Kerry Stevens, losing my oldest son, Miles Johano, is not my flesh and blood son, losing the case on purpose because they're not submitting pretrial motions to suppress. So I've done some research, and I wrote a flyer showing passengers don't have to show ID. My children were passengers in the vehicle, but guess what? My ex-girlfriend, Catherine West, wasn't even stopped. Her car was legally parked 3:30 in the morning outside of a public park cooking steaks for my sons because they were hungry. So the cops run a license plate check illegally, find out the car has been reported stolen by Roger Gavel, her stepfather. Her name, Catherine West, used to be Catherine Gavel. And they hold her in for possession of a stolen vehicle. they claim they couldn't turn their children over to me because, well, Mr. Ewing, we have you and Catherine West weren't married. We don't have any birth certificates on file. By the way, folks, I got my children out of the hospital with no birth certificate, no vaccinations, no vitamin K shots. I refused to even give the hospital my children's names because I didn't want them to get a birth certificate. So people who make the argument that birth certificate gives jurisdiction are full of crap. It makes not one damn bit of difference. In fact, it causes you more of a holdup in court later. Okay, so one of the things I do, folks, is I dispel patriot theories. But at the same time, I'm a gung-ho guy. I like to check out stuff and see if there's any truth to it. And there's partial truth to, you know, a bunch of silly arguments, but that's a different topic for another day. What I want to
Lewis,
point
to... hate to interrupt you here. I know you're on a roll. We got to take a break, but we'll be right back, folks. Stay tuned.
Buying or selling a home today can require guidance, professional execution, and local knowledge. The real estate professionals at Century 21 Sherlock Homes have the tools and resources to help you navigate the real estate market in the local area and find opportunities. Let us help you make your real estate dream a reality. Talk to a Century 21 Sherlock Homes sales associate today and learn how they can help put the power of Century 21 system to work for you. Visit Century 21 Sherlock Homes at 302 West Tioga Street, Tunkhannock, Pennsylvania, or give them a call at 570-836-3457.
The Donna LaBar Hour on Mind, Body, and Soul. Created for you, Donna LaBar has brought together cutting-edge techniques and approaches for a natural, healthy, well-balanced lifestyle. From practitioners and the natural and health and well-being business community. That's the Donna LaBar Hour on Mind, Body, and Soul. Every Saturday at 8 a.m. on TwigsCafeRadio.com.
This is Nurse John from WaterCures.org. I want to show you how to salt and water your way to an A. Before you know it, your next test, your next midterm, or final is going to be here. You can improve your memory and your school grades without using dangerous and illegal drugs. This little-known ancient trick will help you think, reason, and test better than ever before. What is this trick that can help you improve your grades? Place a pinch of unprocessed sea salt on your tongue, dissolve it, and then drink a glass of water. Do it about 30 minutes before you study and 30 minutes before you test, and get ready to be amazed. This won't get you out of studying. You can't recall what you don't know, but you're going to find it easier to study and easier to remember. One last thing, it has to be unprocessed salt. Numerous minerals in the salt are part of what make you smarter. Go do it. What are you waiting for? Get smart. Use the Water Cures protocol. Discover more how to salt your way to an A at watercures.org. Paid for by Connie and Bob Butts.
And we're back, folks. Welcome back to Politically Incorrect. I'm your host, John Kistler. We have Lewis Ewing on the line here. You know, for those of you that have been listening, I mean, Lewis is just, he's so passionate about what he does. He must have a photographic memory because he is just spitting out case law left and right. I'm glad that we're recording this show and that you can dig up in our archives if you miss any of it, because he has just covered so much information, especially with those of you who are having problems with Children Protective Services. I mean, the fact that they've been given immunity, that they can actually sit there on the stand and lie, the judge knows that they have immunity, and yet he'll go through the motions and swear them in. You know, talk about collusion. I mean, we had the Kids for Cash scam here in Lackawanna and Luzerne County, you know, blow up in their faces a couple years ago. We have two judges that actually went to prison over it. And the reason I think that that all happened was not so much the fact of the corruption, not so much the fact that you know, they were allowing this perjury and stuff to go on in their courtrooms. It was the fact that they got greedy. They were a couple fat cat judges who thought that they were above the law. They had a local well-known attorney involved, and they also had a guy with a lot of money, Bob Miracle, involved. And what they were doing was they were capitalizing on this closed-circuit, closed-loop system that they devised, where they were taking children and throwing them in lockup for ridiculous offenses, you know, talking back to the teacher. I mean, just totally absurd reasons, and capitalizing and monetizing on these children. A couple children actually committed suicide. There were many children that are, you know, emotionally scarred for life, and they seem to have shown no remorse when they were sentenced after all of the trials that took place, you know, in connection with this. But the only thing that got them caught, I think, was the sheer fact of the greed that they weren't sharing with the other people in the food chain above them. And I think that was the only thing that brought them down. They just got too greedy, and the people that they should have been sharing with, they would have hushed this all up and made it go away, weren't getting their fair share, or so they thought, and that's why they got caught. So, Lewis, now that I've gotten that off of my chest, let me let you get back to it. Here we got about, 12, 15 minutes here before we have to close the show, and I'll have to cut you off, unfortunately, but I will have you back on the show again. So before you get back into it, please give out your contact information again, because it's important that people know that.
Well, my home office phone is 360-335-1322. If you want to text me to my cell phone, that would be 253-226-3741. And my email addresses are rcwcodebuster. That's in the singular. There's no S in the and. rcwcodebuster. So I have rcwcodebuster at AOL.com, Yahoo.com, and Gmail.com. My main websites are lewisewing.com. LUISEWING, LewisEwing.com. Ultimate Users, just like Ultimate Fighting, Ultimate Users with an S on the end, UltimateUsers.com. You'll see a picture of the White House covered with marijuana plants. And also IRS Buster, that's the Internal Revenue Service, IRSBuster.com. But anyway, back to what I was talking about, the Frank's motion raising a Giglio claim, NAPU versus Illinois claim, Alcorta versus Texas claim, a Piles versus Kansas claim, a Giglio claim, and a Brady claim. These cases are based upon a case called Mooney versus Holohan. 294 U.S. Reporter, page 103, 55 Supreme Court Reporter, page 340, or 79 Limited Edition, page 791, 1935. Okay? That's a good thing you raised about the financial stuff. That's, folks, I'm looking for somebody who's a financial expert who studied the financial federal funding side, because what I'd like to do, if I could get more information on this, you can see some links I've posted about federal funding on my Facebook, Lewis Ewing on Facebook. What I'd like to do is put together a public disclosure request listing every single statute that they get federal funding and ask for a specific accounting. I want to know how much, like, we got 39 counties in Washington, so I want to submit a CPS public disclosure request to CPS for the whole state, for all 39 counties, and specifically Kitsap County, and I want to know how much money is being allocated to Kitsap County. How much money is my children getting from each statute? Are there adoption bonuses? Okay, so how come none of the public defenders are asking for proof of the funding and asking whether or not there's adoption bonuses, because I'm finding case law on the criminal side where an informant is being paid and the prosecutors fail to reveal that information to the defense attorneys, it's grounds for a new trial, grounds for dismissal of the case, because the informant has an incentive to lie. Or if the informant's been offered a deal, like, we'll drop some of your charges, you got felony charges facing pending over here, but we got a really weak case over here, and we need you to come over here and kind of fib the truth a little bit. And we can't say it directly, but basically, if you lie for us and cause us to get this child into custody, we'll drop some of these charges over here in the other case. If the prosecutors and the attorney generals running your cases aren't revealing the fact that your social workers get adoption bonuses, or for that matter, where are the attorney generals getting their money? The ones running the family court cases, where is the money coming from to foot their bill, to pay their paycheck? How about the public defenders? Where are they getting their money from? How about the judges running your case? Where are they getting their money from? They're getting it from the children, folks. Okay, so Mooney versus Holohan. I'm going to read you a case from Washington deciding it. State versus Finnegan. The prosecutor's duty to disclose evidence favorable to defendant began with Mooney versus Holohan, wherein the Supreme Court held it was reversible error for the prosecution to suborn perjury to seek a conviction, citing Alcorta versus Texas, which extended the Mooney doctrine to the prosecutor's use of evidence known to be false. The prosecutor's duty not to suborn perjury or to use evidence known to be false was further enlarged to place upon the prosecutor an affirmative duty to correct state witnesses who testify falsely, citing Napu versus Illinois. The rationale of these cases cited and the myriad ones relying thereon cast the duty of the prosecutor's misconduct, since the use of perjured or false testimony severely undermined the nature of the judicial system, citing Miller versus Pate. Okay. Mooney versus Holohan says such a contrivance by the state to procure the conviction and imprisonment of the defendant is inconsistent with the rudimentary demands of justice, as is the obtaining of a like result by intimidations. Okay. In Piles versus Kansas, the court stated, this is 317 U.S. Reporter page 213 or 63 Supreme Court Reporter page 177 or 87 Limited Edition 214, 1942. The court stated, petitioner's papers are inexpertly drawn, but they set forth allegations that his imprisonment resulted from perjured testimony knowingly used by the same authorities of evidence favorable to him. Those allegations sufficiently charge a deprivation of rights guaranteed by the federal Constitution, and if proven, would entitle petitioner to release from his present custody. Holy crap. So if we prove the social worker is lying and the prosecutor knowingly used that perjured testimony to obtain a finding of dependency or the termination of their parental rights, this case says this motions would entitle the petitioner to release from custody. So how come none of the public defenders are raising a habeas corpus for the children? You know what? They've never done that, folks. The state is taking your children under the parents patria doctrine, so they're acting like a parent. Why aren't we using a habeas corpus against the state officials for using false testimony to steal your children? I've got the case law that says if you prove the perjured testimony, it's a mandatory reversible error. Now, back to anybody's challenge saying, Lewis, you can't raise this in a civil proceeding. Okay, I'm going to give you folks a case for saying these people, the attorneys, are either incompetent, ignorant of the law, or they know this and they're a conspiracy not to tell you this. Because guess what, folks? I'd say 90 to 95% of all the taking of children into custody is based upon perjured testimony. And if all the public defenders and all the people in the family courts were start to demand that their attorneys, public defenders, write a Frank's motion, demand a full-on evidentiary hearing called a Frank's hearing, and you submit prima facie preponderance of evidence proof that the social worker committed perjury, and if they try to argue, no, no, that only applies to criminal, here's the slam dunk rebuttal of that. Quote, the same legal standard applies in evaluating Fourth and Fourteenth Amendment claims for the removal of children, citing Wallace versus Spencer, 202 Federal 3rd, 1125 and 1137, Note 8, Ninth Circuit, 2000. Brokaw versus Mercer County, 235 Federal 3rd, 1000 to 1019, Seventh Circuit, 2000. Here's another good quote. There is no social worker exception to the Fourth Amendment. Jones versus Hunt, 410 Federal 3rd, 1221 and page 1225, Tenth Circuit, 2005. The courts may not use a different standard other than probable cause for the issuance of such orders. We're talking about a pickup order, emergency order, order to take your child into shelter care, or an order to take your child into foster care, a finding of dependency, terminating your parental rights. If they're terminating your parental rights and it's based upon perjured testimony, folks, the courts may not use a different standard other than probable cause for the issuance of such orders. Griffin versus Wilcox, 483 U.S. Supreme Court Reporter, page 868, 1987. See also Marshall versus Barlow's, Inc., citing Camera versus Municipal Court, which, by the way, folks, are civil cases, and the City C versus the City of Seattle, holding that probable cause has not been abandoned as a requirement. Marshall versus Barlow's, Incorporated, 436 U.S. Supreme Court Reporter, page 307, May 23, 1978. The boundary for defendant's conduct establishing the contours of the right involved is the Fourth Amendment, which prohibits unreasonable searches. So social workers can't go into your house, folks, without a warrant, period. The case law had unimpeachably established the cardinal principle that searches conducted outside the judicial process without prior approval by judge or magistrate are per se unreasonable under the Fourth Amendment. Franz versus Lytle. Folks, that's another social worker case. Franz versus Lytle, 997, Federal 2nd, 784, 787, 10th Circuit, 1993. The Fourth Amendment search and seizure provisions are applicable to the 14th Amendment due process clause, the Mapp versus Ohio. This is cited by Tenenbaum versus Williams. Now, all you people who are familiar with family law need to go back and read Tenenbaum versus Williams, 193 Federal 3rd, 581 at 602 2nd Circuit, 1999. So guess what, folks? You can raise a Frank's motion that raises a Giglio claim, a Napu versus Illinois claim, a Piles versus Kansas claim, an Alcorta versus Texas claim, an Aggers versus United States claim, and a Brady claim. Caseworkers investigating child abuse, however, like police officers, routinely conduct investigative seizures and searches requiring familiarity with the Fourth Amendment will not, therefore, be unduly burdensome. Again, Tenenbaum versus Williams. Here's a different site for it, though. 862 Federal Supplement, page 962 at 976, Eastern District of New York, 1994. In the context of a seizure of a child by the state during an abuse investigation, as the district court recognized, see Tenenbaum, 862, Fed Supplement, 974, Note 7, a court order is the equivalent of a warrant. Okay, Tenenbaum versus William, 193, Federal 3rd, 581 at 602, 2nd Circuit, 1999. We have held the Fourth Amendment regulates social workers' civil investigations. Woolley versus City of Baton Rouge, 211, Federal 3rd, 913, at 925, the Fifth Circuit in the year 2000. Identical Fourth Amendment standards apply in both the criminal and civil context. In Franks, this is versus Lytle, not Franks versus Delaware, 717 Federal 2nd at 186, we apply the same Fourth Amendment probable cause standard to regulate the conduct of both a police officer and a social worker, citing Doe versus Texas Department of Protective and Regulatory Services, 299 Federal 3rd, 395, 9th Circuit, 2002. See also Gates versus Texas Department of Protective and Regulatory Services, 537 Federal 3rd, 404, and no, this isn't my photographic memory, but this is case quote typed.
Well, okay, so, you know, you've got so much information. I hate to cut you off here. We're coming up on the hour. Just real quick again, give your contact information, because anybody that's listening that's having a problem with Children Protective Services, you should get in touch with Lewis, see what he has to offer as far as help for you. If you're blowing money on an attorney, you're blowing money on an attorney. I think Lewis has your answers. So, Lewis, please give us your contact information. I will have you back on the show again here. Maybe next time we'll talk about some IRS issues, because that's another topic that's, near and dear to me out here. I know people that are having problems. So, quick, give your contact information before I have to close the show.
Okay, my home office phone, 360-335-1322. Don't call me before 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I'm a late-night person. I'm up to 2:30, 3:30 in the morning typing. My email addresses are rcwcodebuster@aol.com, yahoo.com, and gmail.com. And again, look at my websites, Lewis Ewing, L-U-I-S-E-W-I-N-G, lewisewing.com. But the main point today, folks, is I reveal something to you that no public defender, no attorney in the family court system has ever revealed to you, that you can, this is the potential to reverse and cause people to get their children back of every child ever taken into custody based upon perjured testimony. We're talking motions to vacate judgment, writs of habeas corpuses, personal restraint petitions. This would be the grounds for a counterclaim, a counter lawsuit, to get your children back. If you can prove there's any perjured testimony in your case, it's a Frank's motion raising a Giglio claim, a Napu versus Illinois claim, a Piles versus Kansas claim, an Alcorta versus Texas claim, an Aggers claim, and a Brady violation for not revealing adoption bonuses, which give financial incentive for the
Lewis, I got to cut you off, buddy. That's a wrap for tonight, everybody. Thanks for listening. Lewis, thanks for coming on. I'm going to have you back. I'll get in contact with you tomorrow. Good night, everyone.